This is How to Business in Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corbett.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of How to Business in Show Business. Before we get started, go ahead and click that subscribe button so you can stay caught up anytime there's a new post. Actors, thank you for joining me for another episode this week. I am so excited to share this week's guest and discussion with Michael Wordley, not to be confused with Worldly. No. So on this week's episode, we're going to be talking about moving to market, reality versus expectation, something I know a lot of us, when we are wanting to pursue a career in show business, have dreams and aspirations of, and you know I've said it before, LA, Atlanta, Chicago, Vancouver, Toronto, BC, New York, right? But what is the real reality of living in said place? Financially, how much does that cost? Roommate situation, continue training, the side hustle. These are some of the things that we're going to be talking about in part one of our conversation with Michael. Now, I have to give Michael a shout out because I am so happy for my friend. He is in the production of Kinky Boots over at the Paramount Theater doing the title role of Lola. So if you get a chance to go see that, please go see that. Go support. Now that live theater is back in the swing of things, it's now important more than ever that we don't take it for granted again. So congratulations to you, Michael. So without further ado, let's get into our conversation. God. All right. Well, Michael, thanks for joining me.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find most interesting is your last name. Before I get to my question, I always fumble up on it. I see it before me, and I know it's Wordly, but I almost want to say Worldly sometimes. Do people ever say that?
All the time. Literally every single time. Yeah, I'm used to it now. So if you mess up, it's not a biggie at all. I'm pretty chill, relaxed. I mean, I kind of wish my last name was Worldly. Because then people are like, oh my gosh, like you're so worldly. And I'm like, okay. Whatever.
On that note, who is Michael Wordly?
Who is Michael Wordly? Michael Wordly is a carpenter. No, Michael Wordly is a believer. Mm-hmm. He is a family member, a friend, an actor, okay, an artist, right. Actor, artist together. Yeah, I'll say those things together.
Don't you always find it interesting when we, and I don't know what, I don't, I sometimes, you know, we being in, being that we live in the States, you know how America loves her labels. I always find it so interesting when we categorize ourselves, what is of most precedence to us. I'm a wife, I'm a brother, I'm a public servant, I'm a provider, I'm a protector, I'm a yoga instructor, I never find one that resonates with me that's always like, here's just who I am. Do you ever find that to be a struggle sometimes?
Sometimes, I have a very, very strong upbringing. Even with my parents, like they are not musical theater people at all. Mm-hmm. So when I was growing up, you know, when they finally discovered that I could sing and I could do this, you know, as a profession, mm-hmm. They were always concerned with like, okay, well, Michael, you know, as long as you know who you are, like this is not who you are. And it took me a few years to like really, really understand that. And honestly, I'm very, very happy that I did understand it because, you know, I have a lot of friends and a lot of colleagues that are really, really going through right now in this pandemic because thank you. They, you know, who they believe that they were is mm-hmm. now gone. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't have like a strong foundation of like, well, you know, although this part of me is missing, it's not just all of who I am.
Yeah.
that makes any sense. I hope it did.
No, it does. being that you're so eclectic in your circle, what is a hobby and or interest that you have outside of the business?
Interest outside of the business. I love fitness.
Mm.
I love it. I love like group fitness. Okay. So, you know, your Berries, your Orange Theory, your Switch, your boxing, like any type of like group fitness, yeah. I love, because I just love the community aspect of it. Like I love, this will sound very funny, but this is really what I love. I love like being in the class and like looking up and like seeing like the person like two treadmills down also dying, and you'd be like, oh my gosh, we're all dying together.
Like, oh my gosh.
That's fun to me. You know what I mean though? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
The camaraderie. Enjoy it.
It's fun.
The fellowship and the, we're all in it together.
We are all in this together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Literally.
Let's take it back to the beginning.
Okay.
What was young Michael like?
What was young Michael like? Like, what age would you say? Like six?
Pre-teenager.
Pre-teenager. Young Michael was a football player. I grew up in church. And my week literally consists of school, football practice, school, football practice, school, choir rehearsal, school. So as far as like who I was though, as a young age, I mean, I was energetic. I was very, very optimistic. I mean, I had a good childhood. I think I was loving. I was funny. I thought I was funny. Maybe not.
So being that young Michael was funny and loving, mm-hmm. what was your first memory, or what was your first introduction to either the arts and or entertainment?
Church plays. No. Okay. My first introduction, do you guys have PBS in?
We have PBS.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it. So have you ever seen Great Performances?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay. So there was this episode of Great Performances where it was the Three Mo Tenors. Have you heard of the Three Mo Tenors?
No, I don't think I have.
So the Three Mo Tenors is basically it was on Broadway, but it was these three black vocalists who were doing like their version of the three tenors. But basically what they were doing was they would do classical music, they would do jazz, they would do gospel, they would do, I mean, just musical theater, they would do all different styles of music, but like would do it incredible. Like I'm still shocked today when I watch those videos. If you have time, I highly recommend them. But that was like my introduction to musical theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was basically a cabaret show, but that was like my introduction to musical theater. I mean, I want to say that maybe it came on sometimes like once a month, and I would literally watch it every single month.
Right.
Yeah. It was incredible. I could not believe that someone's instrument could do that. Someone can like make their voice sound, you know, legit, and then switch it. Literally, they would switch it to the next song and it would be musical theater, and then they would switch it again and it would be gospel, but it would like sound exactly how it should sound. I mean, it was incredible. So that was like my introduction into musical theater.
Did Great Performances make you have that moment of, that's what I want to do for a profession?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah, hands down. Well, A, it was the first time that I saw someone who looked like me who also did not just sing gospel or R&B. They also sung classically as well. And yeah, I could absolutely say at that time, I said, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to figure out how I can make my voice do that.
At that time in your life, was it you or your parents who recognized you had the gift or the inclination of whether it be show business or the acting bug or the singing bug, whatever it is?
It was neither. it was my grandma. My grandma, she always tells this story that, because sometimes, when I tell you I was crazy about this great performance video, I would, and this was like back in the day, like I would get a VHS and like try to record it.
Come on, so VHS. Who remembers that? Come on now, raise your hands. Raise your hands.
If you remember what VHS is about. So I would try to record it on my TV. And if I missed it, I would try to go to my grandma's house and try to record it there. Yeah. But my grandma, she tells this story that like, so basically what I would do is I would try to write down like the lyrics that they were singing so I could try to practice with them and try to get my 12-year-old voice to sound like that.
Right.
It was wild. Now that I think about it, just wild. But I would then go to my grandma's house and then I would go in the back room and I would try to like sound like them.
Okay.
So imagine like a 12-year-old trying to sing, you know, Nessun Dorma or something, you know, something crazy like that. So there was some interesting sounds coming out of my mouth. And they weren't always that good. But my grandma, she would say, you know what? That boy is going to be a singer. You guys watch. Because I mean, definitely, maybe I should have added this as well. When I was younger, like I was like, if I wanted to do something, I would literally commit and try my hardest to do it. Because no one in my family sung at all. Mm-hmm. So just by me rehearsing and like trying to, I'm losing my words, but trying to, you know, emulate them.
Right.
I think I discovered my own sound. So yeah, I guess it was my grandmother who discovered it at first. Yeah.
You know, I ask everybody this question and it gets a very interesting response. And I think sometimes, because everything's different when you're a kid or when you're younger and you have like that carefree kind of a life, and like, I'm just doing this just for fun. And you really see like a kid's passion come through as opposed to like, oh, now we're working for this because this is a job that has money attached to it. And to be a kid and to live in that carefree world of, I'm just doing this because I enjoy this and this is my passion. And so whether it's they recognize it first or their family recognize, I always find that to be a very diverse range of response. But I think that's phenomenal that she was able to detect that at such a young time in your life. Or early time in your life, so.
Yeah.
What was, I don't know if I've asked you this. Did you ever go to school for continued education?
Yes, but not to be a performer.
Oh, interesting. Let's tap into that. What did you go in with first when you went to school?
So when I was in high school, let's start to middle school. So when I was, you know, six to eighth grade in the States, but I fell in love with choral music, fell madly in love with choral music. Again, I just could not understand how a group of people can sound like one voice. So I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And I want to teach people how to do it as well. Right on. So then I end up going to a Magnet Performing Arts school in middle school and then end up going to like one of the top choral performing arts schools in America. I just want to put that out there. Shout out to Choral Racing High School. Trained under a gentleman, rest in peace, Mr. John Rose, who was my choral director. And I was just obsessed. I was like, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing. I'm gonna go to college and I'm gonna become a choral director. Like this is it. End up going to basically a conservatory where I taught children around the world, actually, literally everywhere. And we did like workshops with these students. basically teaching them singing and dancing and acting. But my lane was more of the choral route. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so even right now, I'm like, Michael, how did you even get into musical theater? Like, how did this happen? And I mean, I do know how it happened, but it's even because, I mean, even right now, you know, I still love choral music. I'm obsessed, like with, you know, with Eric Whitaker and Moses Hogan. Like, I love these people who can write these beautiful choral arrangements, and I love people who can sing them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I love that sound. Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to be a high school choral director.
So being an educator, mm-hmm. do you think that it's something that you'll get back to?
Yeah, actually. I don't know when. I'm very much so a person who is, I try my hardest to live in the moment, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm not sure when that is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Just because of, you know, career-wise right now, I have now fallen in love with musical theater as well. And so, yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but I do think eventually, I mean, honestly, I believe that we're all educators in some aspects. So yeah. We shall see.
So being that you live in the moment, and this is where your career or life's journey has taken you now, musical theater, did mm-hmm. musical theater choose you, or did you choose it out the gate? Because you just said, like, you don't know how you got, you know how you got here, but it's like the belief of like, oh, I'm actually doing this now, you know, like, how did this happen so fast?
You know, I mean, I'm not sure how many people have given you this response, but I do believe that musical theater chose me. And let me explain. So, you know, I hear there was one time where I was in a audition room mm-hmm. and I was with a group of people, and this was like when I first moved to New York City.
Yeah.
And everyone was talking about, you know, I trained at this prestigious conservatory, and I trained at this school, and I trained at this school, and you know, I just got off of this tour. Like, you know, the people were basically giving their resumes, and I literally sat at Pearl, and I was like, okay, God, like, is this what you, like, am I supposed to be here? Like, I know that I feel like I'm supposed to be in New York, but is this what I'm supposed to be doing right now? Yeah. And like, I literally went into that audition, and I just felt at ease. Like, I didn't, there was no like, oh my gosh, like I really, really need this. Like, I mean, I felt like I finally belonged mm-hmm. when I went into that room and I auditioned for them. And, you know, yeah. So as far as like how it chose me, yeah, I just finally felt like I fit in this community.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't like trying hard to like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, see me. It was just like, hey, this is who I am. Yeah. Do you accept it? And it did. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I hope that answered your question.
No, I concur with that sentiment, because for me personally, I just thought that I was going to be a ballet dancer, because I'd spent the majority of my training as a ballet dancer. Now I've done commercial and theater style, but primarily it was like New York City Ballet or American Ballet Theater. That's just what I wanted to do. And then I met Kenny Ingram, and he's like, you know, you're a dancer that can sing. We'll work on your acting, but like you should really consider musical theater. Dancing is such a short career. Why not get as much out of it while you can? And so through him, or via him, in that experience that I had at that summer workshop, like, it chose me, and it, like, theater has humbled me. Like, it has humbled me, because I'm like, musical theater, what? I want to be a film actor. I want to be a ballet dancer. Theater. And I was like, no, like, there's a lot of work that goes into it, and there's a lot of there's a lot of the 10,000 hours. You want to be a proficient mm-hmm. working somebody in any field. And I've said this before, you have to put in your 10,000 hours and you have to cut your teeth. You got to cut your teeth somewhere. Put in the time. Yeah. That's how you get better. It's not going to happen overnight. You want to be that 1%. What are you going to do to train like them? Truly, like, what are you going to do? Yeah. And you have to be open to when things come your way and meet that vibration when it happens. It doesn't mean that it's not going to happen never, but it's like, no, here's where your life is directing right now, theater. Okay, great, cool. I will get back to doing ballet or get back to doing other aspects at a later date. But for right now, theater's here. So
yeah,
I understand.
No, absolutely. Completely. Absolutely.
Now, as we move on to this advice portion, and you already talked about it, moving to New York, we're going to talk mm-hmm. about the reality versus the expectation. And first of all, before I get there, how do you personally business and show business? And let me reframe the question.
Okay.
What lesson was your saving grace?
The lesson that was my saving grace. I think there were two lessons. Can I say both of them?
Yeah, please.
When you walk into the room, and this is just in life, but especially in musical theater. When you walk into the room, mm-hmm. speak to everyone.
Yeah.
Every single person. I mean, ushers, house staff, stage management, when I first started in my first like professional gig, which was like the national tour of The Little Mermaid, I was a understudy to a gentleman by the name of Melvin Abson, and he pretty much just took me underneath his wings. He said, "Kid boy, because you know what you talk about. Come over here. Let me show you how to do this thing." And I was like, okay. And one of the most important lessons he taught me was, be genuine about it as well. You know, he was like, one day he had asked me, he was like, "Michael, there was something wrong with my costume." And he was like, "Michael, like, just go tell your costume person, you know, hey, could you please fix this, whatever." And he was like, "What's her name?" Because I was shy, like I didn't want to talk, I was so nervous. And he was like, "What's her name?" And I could not tell you her name. Mind you, this is about a month into the run, and I could not say what her name was. And he literally took me into his dressing room. He said, "Hey, Michael, this is an issue. This is a big issue, because the fact that you can tell me who the artistic director name is, but you can't say who your dresser name is. This is somebody that's helping you as well. Yeah. And you don't know who their name is. That's a problem." So I definitely had people like that mm-hmm. who were like, no. Come here. Let me show you how to do this thing. Lesson number one, be kind to everybody inside the room.
Yeah.
Every person inside the room. The second lesson that I learned, and I think this is more to what you were saying as well, how like musical theater has humbled you.
Yeah.
Always know that there's somebody better than you.
Yeah, come on now. Yes, yes, you're not wrong.
Always know, because especially in this business, you know, mm-hmm. you have to have confidence in order to survive. In this business, you have to have confidence, because you get so many no's, so much rejection that it like will weigh down on you, you know, weigh down on you so much. And for me, somebody telling me, "Uh-oh, a car going across."
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is New York City. This is the reality.
We can edit that out. Me knowing that there's always somebody better than me, I can't get complacent.
Yeah.
I can't.
Ready, like, and waiting in the wings.
Like,
waiting.
Always ready. Waiting. God. And honestly, they're probably better than you. They probably are better than you. Yeah. So you can't get complacent. You have to keep working on your craft. Even now, like, I'm like, you know, I had just watched... Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on Netflix. And I was like, you know, first I watched it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely incredible. And I was just watching it, you know, just, well, A, being a fan of Chadwick and, you know, I mean, everybody, Viola, everybody on the cast. And then now I'm watching it again.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, like I need to get some of these monologues. I need to start working on these monologues. Like there's so much stuff that I could be doing right now, you know, because I know somebody else out there who's a lot better than me is already doing it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because I watched it too, and I have to go back and watch it again a second time. I have a hard time watching movies and plays because Marilyn Monroe said it best. It's more interesting dreaming about being an actor than it is to be one. And because when I watch shows, when I watch plays, my mind's running with, oh, what was the production quality? Costuming, sound, lighting, makeup, direction, text, right? Like that's where my mind goes. And so I have to watch things a second time to really enjoy it as a viewer, but even then it's still kind of hard to just let it go. But because, and I did pick up on this the first minute, because they address so much societal issues at that time, like they threw a lot in. And I'm just like, wow. And you know, that's why August Wilson is August Wilson. And I thought that he'd, I hope that I get a chance to see a play rendition of it. I'm pretty sure I could find something online, but you know, I thought it was beautiful.
It was incredible.
Okay, so same question, but I'm going to refrain a little bit differently now. What knowledge about the business was gifted to you that you did not know?
Read your contracts.
yes.
Read your contract. People don't do it for some reason. I don't understand why. You know, I mean, you would think in like show business, it's like, oh my gosh, like I'm doing the show, but like people don't understand like the business part of it, which I think is just so absolutely incredible that you're doing this. Because, you know, I love us, but we'd be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I'm on this tour, but you don't know what, are you on a theater tour? Are you in a production tour? Like, you know, and then you get all these things that are thrown at you and you're like, well, I should not be doing this. Well, it's in your contract.
Yeah.
So you're contracted to do this. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's one of the things that was gifted to me, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Read your contract. Make sure you understand.
Yes. You have to be your own advocate and make sure you understand it for yourself. And if there's something you don't understand, go ahead and ask questions. Like there's nothing wrong with that. Because sometimes not putting anyone under the bus. Sometimes production might miss something. Sometimes your agent or your manager might miss something. And it doesn't mean they're bad or that they were intentionally trying to hire. Some people make mistakes and you have to assume, and this is what's so bad. You have to assume that, that's going to sound so bad, but you have to assume that no one is looking out for you in terms of no one has your best interest at heart more than you do. Truly. Because you have to live with you at the end of the day. You have to, what's the word that I'm looking for? Like I said, be your own advocate, but there's another word that I'm looking for. But truly, no one has your best interest more than you. Because that's your name. That's your brand. And if you aren't going to advocate for your brand, how are you going to expect someone else to? And even when you do have a team doing it for you, you still need to hold them accountable and make sure like, no, we need to go back and look at some things.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's great. And I support that 110%. Again, reality versus expectation. Let's get started with this first question. When did you decide, actually first, why did you decide to move to New York as opposed to LA, Vancouver, Toronto, Chicago, Atlanta?
When I was in high school, we took we were actually on a choral competition trip and it was in New York City and it was my first time in New York City, and they were like, you know, you guys are gonna go see a Broadway show, and you know, I was excited, but I had no expectation, and the show that we went to go see was Wicked, and Shoshana Bean was Elphaba. So I remember going into the theater and watching this happen. Mm. And I told myself at that moment, okay, I'm not sure where my life is going to go, but I know I'm going to end up here. Mm. I have no idea how it's going to work out, but I have to be in New York City. Mm. So I was doing a production in LA, Sweet Charity, and saved up some money and packed my bags and left. Mm. Yeah, moved here, no agent, no manager.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.